You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And so this book is about the idea that style alone, strength alone, past experience alone is not enough. And in fact, is probably, Michael, getting in our way.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. One of the greatest pleasures of my podcast is getting to read advanced copies of top-notch books and then speak one-on-one with the author before their works hit the bookshelves. So I am very excited about today's guest, Kevin Eikenberry, who Global Gurus has called one of the top most influential thinkers on leadership in the past 3 years. We're going to discuss his latest book, which releases in March. Flexible Leadership, Navigate Uncertainty, and Lead with Confidence. Why is Kevin and his book important? Real simple. Kevin's definition of leadership is straight on. It's about achieving valuable outcomes. And if you want to achieve valuable outcomes for your organization, yourself, and others, be that bottom line results, satisfaction, or career acceleration for any of those three groups, you better get better at navigating uncertainty, which, oh man, we are in right now. In fact, on a total side note, but in a crazy sign of the times, a recent article in the New York Times shared how C-suite leaders are turning to mind-altering drugs to cope and find answers. So I'd say you can save yourself that trip, pun here intended, and go with a safer, practical, and much higher ROI and long-lasting approach with Kevin's book. Flexible Leadership, okay, let me just say, is not another here's a list of skills book. Those fill the management shelves. I appreciate it because it is a compact, quick read and very practical how-to guide. Kevin addresses the mindset you need, how to better identify situations and the leadership skills needed to meet those moments, and then how to ensure those skills stick with you, become what he calls habit sets. Our agenda today is simply a conversation. I want to discuss with him two of the most powerful underlying ideas that grabbed me, and then go through an example, a quick one, how a leader would use the book to guide them. And I want to put Kevin on the hot seat there as if he were the client. Okay, if he is game for that. Kevin Eikenberry is a serial best-selling author, coach educator, that's my term, and runs the Remarkable Leadership Podcast. He is the Chief Potential Officer of the Kevin Eikenberry Group, based in Indianapolis, Indiana, USA. All told, he brings 30 years of experience helping organizations and leaders in more than 53 countries become, you got it, more effective. Kevin, was a great privilege to be a guest on your podcast last year, and now to be on the other side of the mic, but still having or being the one to start the conversation. Welcome to 97% Effective.
Michael, it's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for the glowing words. And I share with you the two things about what you've said so far. I share, number one, the joy of getting to read a book before most people do, and then to have a conversation with folks about it. So I totally understand that, and I'm glad you feel that way about this one. And the second thing is, not only will it be cheaper and a different kind of trip than the mind-altering drugs, there's no long-term downside to reading Flexible Leadership. Hopefully all upside.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to just start with, because I read it cover to cover, I blitzed through it, I went back and looked at other parts. So it was fun. I like to look at the notes, right? You cite Warren Bennis, among other people, right? Management guru. Donald Rumsfeld, former U.S. Secretary of Defense. And Annie DeFranco, the singer-songwriter. And so I just want to say that's a testament to the kind of
Julie
broad
Andrews.
And eclectic...
We got it all.
The broad and eclectic thinkers you draw from. But I just got to ask, right, as I followed Annie DeFranco myself for years, how does she get on your radar?
You know, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I've been Michael for, I don't know, as long as I can remember. I've been a collector of quotes, and so I find things, I capture them, I wait for the time and the place to use them, and a book is often a place to do that. And so that's really it. I mean, I'm really looking for the ways that really smart people can share things and provide a perspective that I don't necessarily have. So not much more than that.
Yeah, well, the quote is great because you pull from one of her books and you say, taken out of context, I must seem so strange. So I'm just going to leave it at that. People
say that about me all the time, Michael. Like, that is, I'm like, she doesn't even know me and she wrote that and she's talking about me.
So to pique people's interest, right, that's in chapter 5 there. So make sure you get the book. Let's dive right in, Kevin. You mentioned that you feel, and you've written lots of books. Okay. And you feel this is your best and most important one ever. Bottom line, why a book right now on flexible leadership?
Well, and when you have co-authors and then you say, this is the best work you've done, you feel bad about the co-authors, but they work for me and I write their paychecks. So I suppose that makes that a little bit okay. So listen, here's the thing. People like you and I, and a lot of other really smart people for a very long time, have been trying to figure out how to help leaders get better. And we've developed all sorts of tools, all sorts of approaches to do that. And all of those with good intention. They've had good missional intention. They've, in many cases, been commercially successful. And that's awesome. The problem is that most of those things have not gotten us the results that we really want. So I'm going to specifically speak to leadership styles, assessments of all sorts, whether it's strengths or anything else. And I'm not saying, I know some of the people that have created some of those things, and they are wonderful and they are helpful until they're not. And so this book is about the idea that style alone, strength alone, past experience alone is not enough. And in fact, it's probably, Michael, getting in our way, because we begin to define ourselves by that. Well, I'm that kind of leader. I'm an X leader. I'm a Y leader. I'm a servant leader. I'm a facilitative leader. I'm an agile leader. Like, okay, but the world isn't as simple as that working all of the time. Maybe with a hat tip to you, Michael, maybe that'll work 97% of the time. But the other 3% of the time, it's going to cause you great challenges, both for the outcomes you're trying to reach and with the folks you're trying to reach them with. So to me, I wanted to help create something for people that matched the way the world really works, that the world isn't as simple as any model can make it. And so what's happened is we've created models to help us understand the complex world, and then we've oversimplified the models, and that's where we get into the problem. So what I'm trying to do here is to give us a new way to think about the work that we're doing so that we can approach it differently based on the situation, the context. I know we're going to get there that we're in.
Yeah, I like what you said at one point in the book of like, models becoming too rigid, right? We oversimplify it. We miss nuance. And we're going to go into nuance. And I think you captured it right there. But I know this podcast is about hard truths. And one of the hard truths is people will take away one simple message, unfortunately, right? If people were to take, you want one central idea for them to leave if they remember nothing else from here, what would you kind of capture that succinctly as?
Don't lean into your leadership style, but rather look at the world the way it is and create an approach that will be successful for that context.
Yeah, for that context. Okay, so you have these sections of the book, mindset, talk about the flexors, the skills, very rich section. And then at the end, you talk about habit sets, right? How do we make these things integrated so we're using them or can draw on them? There felt to me two really powerful ideas. We could talk about more, but these were the top two for me, and I really want the audience to hear those. The first powerful idea, number one, was kind of both and thinking. And so what I'd say about this is when people hear the title of your book, Flexible Leadership, I can see one doubt popping into their head. I can see that flexible is better than being rigid, but then this kind of, you know, but being flexible may mean I'm wishy-washy, I can't hold firm. And you use this great analogy, okay? Think of a tree, okay? That is flexible and can manage the wind, but it's still rooted, right? It has, you know, consistency there. So it's not a question of being flexible or being rigid. It's more, and you get us to reframe this, to be flexible and consistent, maybe a reframe on rigid. So I really love that analogy. And, you know, it's this idea of kind of taking two what seem to be seemingly opposite ideas, either or, and moving to kind of this both and mindset. Again, that feels so central and fundamental to the book, really critical to putting in those flexors. Can you share more about this both and mindset and idea?
Yeah, I sure can. So first of all, most of us like to think of the world as either or. We either win or we lose, right? It's a zero-sum game that we're playing. We're playing chess or we're playing checkers, and someone's going to win, someone's going to lose. And so it's easy to think about the world as that way. The world is black and white. It's about the customer or it's about the employee. Like we could go right, like one is right and one is not. It's right or it's wrong. For almost everything in life, we don't live in an either-or world. We live in a shades of gray world. So we live in a both and world. We live in a world where we can be both consistent and rooted in our principles and values and be flexible in our approach. So to go back, just to use the metaphor that you cited. So thinking about the world as a both and world gives us more options. It takes us out of a box. It gives us the chance to be more innovative, and it gives us a perspective that mirrors the world more accurately because the world isn't just a simple zero sum, yes or no, right or wrong, black or white world. So it's moving away from the easier way of thinking, which is either or, to a both and model of how we think about the world. And so it is, I think, a fundamental principle of the book. If you don't sort of get this or are willing to accept and try the idea of there's a multiplicity of possibilities here that we need to consider. If you get that, then you've got the starting point to being a successful, flexible leader.
Yeah. And your book is full of examples. Is there a practical first step that helps people cultivate that? If you were coaching someone to say, hey, go try this or think that.
Here's one of the ways that I like to think about it. So people will come to me, if I'm their coach or in a workshop or whatever, they'll ask me a question. You know, they'll send me a LinkedIn request and I say yes, and please do that. And then they'll ask me a question. And then my next thing is, well, I need a lot more information than whatever. I mean, I could give you an answer to that question, but I don't have enough information. So like the both and thinking model says there's a lot of possible right answers to a situation. And I don't know what the right one is until I know more about what's going on. So a simple example is, Michael, and I use this in workshops sometimes. Everyone who's listening has been in this room, maybe on both sides of this room. You're in a meeting where the boss asks a question, expecting some input, and gets crickets. And you've probably been that boss, that leader, and you've probably been in that audience or in that meeting. And most leaders, when that happens, their first thought is, well, these people don't care or they're not engaged. Now, those are two reasons why people might not be responding. But I can tell you there's about 8 other plausible reasons why people aren't responding instantly. And I don't have to know which of the 10 it is, but if I can recognize that there are 10 possibilities, then I can decide what to do next. That improves my outcome, regardless of which one it is. So what most leaders do is ask, wait, get nothing, roll their eyes, and start talking. What we should do again instead is ask again. Yeah. Ask it in a different way. Ask it a third way. And that will start to erode or release many of those plausible causes. I don't have to know which one it is. I just have to realize that it's more than just they don't care. And once I realize that there are other plausible causes beyond the one that immediately drops into my head, then I have the chance to think about, well, what might I do given that it could be any one of these things?
Yeah. It is all about opening up that mindset. And we're not going to go down the rabbit hole of the scientific evidence and the research done around this. But I would just absolutely say here, because I come from multiple backgrounds, right? If you look at what gets the best negotiation results, from the actual research, it is thinking about win-win and how to expand things versus it's me against you. You look at innovation, the field of design thinking. It is about opening up the solution space. And as coaches, right, when people are in a creative mindset versus the anxious brain mindset, we move out of the binary thinking fear and we move into what's possible.
Which takes us back to our whole earlier conversation about style. If I think that I have this style, that means, oh, I'm supposed to act, or I guess I'm built to act in this way. So I've picked a way, as opposed to saying, well, what are the options for me here?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've worked globally most of my own career. We used to call ourselves expats, but for a period in one place that I worked, we actually called ourselves flexpats, right? How do you become flexible as your situation and context changed? Which brings me to the second powerful idea that you lay out and you have addressed multiple times here, but let's talk about it. Context, okay? So yes, here are all the skills, the flexors as you call them, but in what situations are they going to be most appropriate? Do I flex in those skills that you lay out? It's a lot about kind of reading the room, but can you share a little bit more here about the context and why that's so critical?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Some things, you know, if we're, I worked for a Fortune 10 company a long, long time ago. And I had a great opportunity to work there, learned a great deal while I was there. And back in the late 80s, when I was there, there was lots of focus on best practices. We should find best practices. And when the context is pretty straightforward and everything is known about what's going on, best practices are awesome. The problem is, anytime that what you're trying to apply isn't exactly like the situation you're trying to mirror, best practices can have all sorts of unintended consequences. The context isn't always so clear. And so I'm guessing we're going to dive into this because you mentioned this before we hit record. But we realize as leaders that, well, forget leadership for a second. If you find yourself someplace in the world, you'd really like to have a map about where you are so you can decide what to do next. And the world today is I don't think we have to cite any research on this either, is more complicated and more complex than ever. There's more uncertainty than ever. And so what I'm trying to do is give people a map to help make sense of where they are so they can decide what to do next. Just like if we were, I guess there's a show called Naked and Afraid. I've never watched it, and I certainly don't want to be naked and afraid and alone. But like if I was in that situation, first of all, I'd want clothes. And the second thing I'd want is a map.
Yeah.
Right. To help me say, given the, now I know where I'm at, that will help just me decide what to do next. By the way, I never expected I would say the words naked and afraid on a podcast before, Michael. It's a first.
Here you go. A first on 97% effective.
I just hope I don't say it again on another one.
I love it. So the context here is really important. And you bring up this paradox, and this might be a good time to just touch on this. You say that kind of everything seems to be changing. And as we think about this disruptive world, yet the most important things aren't changing at all. So not to be like a philosopher here, but I love that paradox that you brought up. Do you want to say anything about that or let people chew on that themselves?
Well, I think that there's plenty to chew on, but I would say this, that so what hasn't changed? Human behavior hasn't changed. What hasn't changed? Group dynamics haven't changed. Are those things exactly the way they've always been? The behaviors are the same. The context is different, right? Like the desire that people ultimately have to find meaning in their work, that is as solid as a rock. The context in which we're working and leading might lead us to how do we help people get to that place? And collaboration is something that we've been able to do as humans for as long as we can count the history, and yet now we're doing it across tools like you and I are using today when we're not in the same room and all those other things. So context is different, but the underlying principles aren't changing. So back to the metaphor earlier about the tree, being a flexible leader is not about being inconsistent. It's not about being rigid. It's not about floating in the breeze. It's about being rooted on the things that matter. Principles, values, purpose, and flexible on the approach that we take to achieve those things.
And I'm glad you brought that point. I wanted to bring this up because this comes up a lot in the coaching I do, where the things that don't change, right? Principles, values, purpose. There can be a tendency, and you bring this up in the book, I want to call it out, that we can sometimes, because of our identity, I'm an engineer, I'm a straight shooter, whatever that is, we become very, to use that, too rigid in terms of this is who I am, and therefore it actually impedes us from flexing into certain situations or skills or that we need in new situations. So that can actually, and people can call that like their authentic self, but that ends up potentially holding them back.
There's the paradox, right? Okay, so that's my strength. That's my natural tendency. That's my life experience. But we're more than a human doing. We're a human being. And so we can move beyond that. In fact, need to be able to move and stretch beyond that. It's wonderful to know what our strengths are. It's wonderful to know what our style is. But the minute we lean into it too much, it becomes self-limiting. And then we go down the slippery slope of, well, that's just who I am. And that's an excuse. That's not an explanation. That's an excuse. The world is too complex for us to say, well, it always worked for me. Going to stay right there. And that's easy to see in others. I'm glad that you used that word authentic. Because I think leaders need to be authentic, which means they need to be willing to say, I don't know, which means they need to be willing to say, we got to try something different. And to not try to be the smartest person in the room. You know, I started to laugh when you were talking about, well, I'm an engineer. I wish I had a dime, Michael, for all the times we've been asked in the sales process, right? Or the prospect is saying, so, okay, Kevin, we'd like to have you come in, but have you ever worked with engineers? Or have you ever worked in a hospital setting? Or have you ever worked with doctors? Have you ever worked with lawyers? Kevin, have you ever worked with hourly workers in the shop floor? Like as if they're not human beings.
Right.
Because here's the thing. Okay, yeah, the answer, and I'm honored and blessed to say that the answer to all those would be yes. And it doesn't matter, really, because humans are 95% the same. It's 5% different. And yeah, hopefully I've got enough experience and wisdom to recognize those differences. But again, that's flexing. Yeah. I'm not going to treat people, well, they're all, like, if you give me 10 engineers, and we'll just use the disk model as our measurement tool here. Most people probably have some clue about that. You could say the same about Myers-Briggs or any other of these kinds of tools. Probably 60% are going to be in one quadrant and the rest are going to be in the other quadrants. Like, our natural tendencies make some things naturally useful, but that doesn't mean but that's not skill, that's tendency. And so I can have the skill of being an engineer and be in the opposite quadrant, and I can still be a great engineer. So to try to say, well, I'm an engineer, so this is how I think, it's self-limiting.
Yeah.
Self-limiting.
Yeah. I think this is a huge point, right? We can learn these skills, and we need to be careful of putting ourselves in boxes or self-limiting behaviors.
And oh, by the way, I know you'd agree with this. I just got to say it before we move on. It's not just not putting ourselves in boxes. It's not putting other people in boxes too.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very good point. And I mean, that is the job of leaders, right? We are very rarely doing the things ourselves. We are doing those through other people. Going back to the 3-0 model, which you talk about, outcomes, ourselves, and others.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, executive coach Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
So, Kevin, I want to cut over to an example, because I love examples that help make and bring the book alive, and, you know, people will read it. But a quick one here to kind of whet people's appetite, because it really is a how-to guide. And I wanted, if you're game, to use C-suite leader.
Do I have a choice? I don't think you have a choice,
but I'm giving you the illusion of choice here, right? I get to turn the tables on you. The C-suite leader you are of the Kevin Eikenberry Group, okay, as the example here. And to give a little bit of context here, and in the book, you have a formula, right? Flexible leadership equals intent, context, and flexors, these skills, okay? Yeah. So let's say, hey, we're now end of 2024 beginning of 2025, and you, Kevin, recognize that you should be a better leader, all right? And hey, there's this flexible leadership thing out there. It is totally uncertain times. Also in your business, you're a thought leader. Where do you start? Like, how does Kevin even diagnose himself as to, if we talk about these flexors or skills you need to develop or you don't have, like, how do you know? Like, how are you going to do that?
Well, I think so. The obvious first place is self-reflection, and we are all well served by that. And yet all the research says that as humans, we are not very self-aware. And most of us think we're more self-aware than we actually are. So should we start with self-reflection and self-awareness? Of course, but we need to be getting other data, right? We need to be asking for feedback from our team. If we have a coach, we should be getting feedback from them, although their view is also limited, but it's a different view. We want to get as many, we might take a 360 assessment where we get views from a variety of people that can speak into what people are actually seeing in our behavior and results. So all of those things are true, and we can also just decide that we're going to pay more attention. Right. So here's the thing about self-reflection is, if I'm in this meeting today with a member of my team and I take 10 minutes this evening to ask, or 5 minutes to ask myself, so how did that meeting go? How did they respond? What happened? And then I can say, well, that didn't go quite the way I wanted. Why didn't it? What might I have done differently? Plausible cause analysis. Why did they respond the way they did? I don't know for sure. I can think about that. And I can start looking for patterns in that from one meeting to the next meeting, from one coaching call to the next one, from one training session to the next one, from one one-on-one with my team member to the next, whatever. And so you mentioned it. It starts with intention, with the intention to get better and the intention to understand myself well enough so I know where to start.
And to make this real, okay, Kevin, let's put the real thing out there. Like, what's the feedback you've gotten or where in your reflection, because I know you do this a lot, is like the area that you would work on in 2025?
We don't have long enough for that, Michael. One of the things that I continue to not only notice in myself, but get feedback on is that, which isn't a very good thing in this particular setting, as it turns out, is that I sometimes interrupt. And I don't necessarily mean to interrupt. And I might have some reason in my own head for interrupting. And yet I know that if I stop others from finishing their thought, that I'm not creating a safe place for them. I'm not building my relationship with them. I'm not building trust with them. So just, that's just a very simple one, but a really powerful one. It's something that I've been working on, continuing to work on. And then I'll give you one other one. And that is that we've got so many things in the pipeline related to this book and the launch of this book and a lot of other things, is that I am really good at ideation and not always quite as good with implementation. And so How do I engage my team even better at implementation? How do I, in some cases, let go of some things, knowing that even if they don't do it how I would do it, if they do it, it's going to get done. And if I have it, I might not get done because I'm going to do four more podcasts or whatever, interviews or whatever. So my point is, so the area of implementation is a continuing one for me to engage with my team in ways to help us all be more successful.
So self-awareness around that, you've gotten that feedback, you've kind of parsed it, you've isolated it, and you've, this kind of second step of, you've set your intention there. And I think a good part in your book, which you brought up, is, you know, so if someone's your coach or the team, how do we know that, like, Kevin, this isn't kind of lip service? And then it's also, okay, the boss, right? You know, how do we know that he's further set up for success? He's really going to, like, explore this area, and how do we make sure that kind of happens?
Well,
versus lip service.
See, there I am interrupting again. So I'll say this, that I think that people watch our feet more than our lips. So they're paying attention to what we actually do, not to what we say we're going to do. Having said that, there's great power in saying, here's what I'm working on. So I often will say to leaders at the end of a workshop, like, one of the very best things you can do is go back and tell your team what you're going to work on. Because it does three things. Number one is it solidifies your own intention. Number two, it creates a set of accountability with them. And it improves the chances you'll take action because you've now said, hey, here's what I want to work on. And then the third thing it does is you can say, I'm going to work on this thing, and I hope that you will give me feedback when I'm getting better and when I'm not. And so doing those three things in any situation is a great way to help us move past lip service, to create accountability for ourselves and to create an accountability partner or partners with us. And then the last thing, of course, that specifically does if in a training session is you're now modeling as the leader what you hope they'll do when they come back from training, right? That, yeah. Hey, we don't just go to do this and mark it off and check the list. On my annual review, I'm going to say that I listened to 12 episodes of the 97% Effective podcast. Well, whoopee-doo, right? Like, what did you do with that, right?
Yeah. The action there being critical.
So let me just say one more thing about that, because the question you asked was about our intention and not being lip service. So let's think about those two ideas. Intention and action are both incredibly powerful, but separated, they're far less powerful, right?
Yep.
The synergy of those two things together is critical. So here's the thing. Everything about flexible leadership is about it being harder at first than it is now, because I'm asking you to do something intentionally, which is not necessarily doing what you've always done.
Yeah.
So it requires a new intention. But if you don't take action, intention alone creates guilt. It is self-sabotage. It might hurt your credibility, right? It probably hurts your confidence. Action alone, and just operating off action, is great. Like, nothing happens, nothing's going to change. But if all we do is act the way we've always acted, that, you know, insanity, right? Do the same thing, expect a new result. So it's the combination of the two together that makes the difference.
Right. So that combination, you've got the intention, you've got the action. And this brings us to that part around context. And in the book, there's a lot there that people can look at in terms of the framework of better understanding the situation, because to go to your example here, interrupting, potentially in certain contexts, right? Hey, the house is on fire. You probably do want to interrupt, right? And there's where, you know, you absolutely want to use that. There's other moments where it may not be appropriate. It does cut off things, right? Particularly on other people on your team. And I think this part of that you bring in the book, is take a step back, analyze the context, and you have this framework. We're not going to go into it. It is that map that you talked about. You draw from the Kinevin framework and research there on decision making that you know, puts there's kind of four rough boxes there of different
the map,
uncertain
right?
situations. It's the map. And to make those, there's a clear, chaotic, complicated, and complex boxes framework that you lay out to make those a little bit tangible. Like if you kind of think about your work at the Eikenberry Group, like what might be an example of each of those, which then dictates,
right?
You know, how much do you flex on ideation
versus, where direction, which direction we head, right?
So, yeah. Just to make those real, I think those will bring those home, particularly complicated and complex seem a little bit more confusing. They overlap a little bit more than the others.
They do. And all of them, there's, again, shades of gray as we look at them in some ways. So a clear context is one where we know everything is known. The situation is largely clear. That pretty much anyone who's in the process probably sees what needs to happen. Policy, it can be very effective here because the situation is pretty clear. Everyone pretty much has the knowns. Best practices work great here. A factory floor, order entry department. We could go on and on and on with things where things are pretty clear and straightforward. That's a context that we're in some of the time. Another context is one that's more complicated, where we really need expert voices. Not everyone can see. There are different expertises that can help us see it better, because there are things that we know we don't know. And so if we're aware that we don't have all of the information, it's more complicated. And so maybe we can find good practices. We're probably not looking for there's probably not a single best answer, but there are a range of possible answers that we might have to be juggling or considering against each other. And so we need to bring the collective wisdom of the team together and really be specifically asking people for what is your perspective tell us? What does your expertise tell us? And I really like the word perspective better than expertise. What do you see? Mm. Right? Because expertise in itself can blind us as well. The next is the complex context, which is where, as Donald Rumsfeld said, we don't even know what we don't know, right? There are unknown unknowns. And so we're living in a world now of we're going to have to try stuff and we're going to have to take some best guesses at things. And we really do want everyone's input, but we're probably still going to have to make guesses. We're going to have to make some assumptions because we either can't know it or we don't have nearly enough time to find out enough to know it. And so I think right now there's some things in the world of generative AI for a lot of people, a lot of organizations that are feeling like it's complex, and it probably is. And so what's the best answer there? Try some stuff.
Yeah. On that example, I think this is a really good. So like looking at your business, right? Eikenberry Group is the introduction to generative AI in that space. And then kind of extending that, if that situation, that context, like, what does that mean for Kevin, the leader, in terms of this interruption flexor?
Yeah, so let's just take that. So when ChatGPT came out, a little, as you and I are having this conversation, about 25 months ago, I was aware of it relatively early and started sort of playing around. Didn't really say anything to my team, really just like I'm just kind of individually spent a little time with it. Early in last year, I said, we as an organization need to start to figure this out. I invested in time. I invested in taking training for myself And then we invested in that in others. And so, and in fact, last week we were together. My team is spread out across the United States. We're all together physically once a year. It was last week, and we spent part of that time working on hands-on AI stuff. We've been creating some things internally where we've got our content sort of shielded from the world, and we started practicing it. So we've moved it in our organization, at least in part, from being more complex to just being complicated. And so now I'm leaning into all the experts on the team that have been trying different things. And we've created internal bots to use in different ways. And so we're trying to, the context for us, at least in part, is shifting, right? So the fourth of the contexts is the chaotic state. Like, we just got to do something. And we got to do something right now. We can't like spend some time thinking about before we try something like we would in complex. We got to try something. So we work a lot with organizations in electric utilities. So if you have electricity in your house, at your business, and if something happens and the power goes out, then the power company is really important to you. And these guys, mostly guys, not all, but mostly men who are linemen, are going out, climbing poles, getting into ladder trucks, and they're doing all this stuff to get your power back on, right? And in that moment, that's a chaotic situation. And in that moment, we don't need to sit down and do a lot of plotting and planning. In that moment, someone needs to say, you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here. And in that moment, the leader's role is different than it is in any of the other three that we just talked about. And so, yeah. You said that there's a bleed between complex and complicated. There's a bleed between chaos, chaotic, and clear as well. Because if things are really clear, it's more likely that you as the leader can say, let's go this way. If things are chaotic, people are saying, boss, tell me which way to go.
Yeah.
But the problem is we spend too much of our time as organizations and leaders thinking we're in context of clear and chaotic, when most of the time we're in the realms of complicated and complex.
So it almost seems like periodically, hey, rescan, is this generally the area we're in, or have we shifted and therefore I'm overflexing? To close on that example, Kevin's working on interrupting. Is that in your example here? Hey, it's a chaotic situation. We should try some stuff. That's probably where you just give the order and kind of interrupt if you're working on that specific flexor.
So what I would say in that particular case, Michael, is that yeah, it's probably if our context is chaotic, which I would say in our business it's very rarely so, then me interrupting still might still be rude, but probably won't be viewed as in quite as negative a way, since most of the time in our work, and I would propose in most people's work, we're leading in the realm of complicated and complex, because of the uncertainty that surrounds us, right? In both of those realms, in both of those contexts, it's far more effective for me to talk less and listen more. It's far more effective for me to lean into building trust with my team rather than making statements. And so everything around my communication skills, whether that's listening, not interrupting, and 100 other things, all are more important than ever. And so I guess if we take that, to use that example that I shared with you earlier, I would say the reason, while we could probably always say that if we didn't interrupt, we'd be better communicators, in the world that we're in now, especially if we're trying to lead to get other people to not just comply with us, say, yes, boss, but to be committed, then it's more important than ever that we are truly listening, that we are valuing the responses of others. And while those things can happen when we interrupt, they might not, and the perception is that they definitely aren't.
So we fast forward into next year, okay, or into 2025, and Kevin has set his intention, he's taking action, he's recognizing those contexts, and then flexing, trying those new things, getting feedback along the way. Is that enough repeatedly done to create what you call the habit set? You mentioned a competence-confidence spiral that I think is really important. What creates the habit?
This takes us back to where we started, right? And that is that if we're leaning into our style, our strength, or whatever, we're leaning into our natural response. We're working from a place of unconscious habit. And what being a flexible leader may require for us to do is to stop and create new intention. And then if we want to create new habit, there's lots of great stuff that's been written about habits, including James Clear's Atomic Habits, which I certainly draw on and raise the flag for that book in flexible leadership. But the big thing is we have to decide the new habit we want, and you've sort of been walking through this one of Kevin Interrupts Less. So then we have to understand how habits are built so that I stop my, so it's not like I'm pretty good at realizing when I've interrupted, but what do I need to do in front of that so I don't actually interrupt? So it's figuring out what is the trigger and what's in it for me to create, to not do my natural inclination, which might be to interrupt,
right?
But rather to do something different, take a breath, whatever it might be. Wait another pause, make sure the person's finished, whatever that might be. And so that's translating it into a new habit and building routine around that so that over time, I just do it less. So there was a time in my life, and it's probably true for a lot of people, that they bit their nails. I think a lot of people when they're young bite their nails. I bit my nails. Haven't bit my nails in a long time. One of the things for me, and I didn't even think about this until this very minute, is that every time when I trim my nails, I remind myself, I didn't bite them, right? So there's a reinforcement to me that is now the habit. So there was something that I would do to bite my nails that caused me to or triggered me to do it. And at some point in my past, I replaced that action with something else in that moment. And now I can look at my fingers every day and say, they may not look good, but they didn't get bitten.
We're going to check on you in 2026. We're going to talk to your team and see how that goes. I thank you for walking through that example and exposing yourself, sharing some of your vulnerability, things that you could be doing better. It sounds like you are well on your way in that regards, but we will check with the team. Kevin, was there an important question here that I did not ask you?
No, this is a great conversation. You know, you and I talked before we hit the record button that we're both as podcasters, you know, I think we both are probably on our best behavior when we're interviewing another podcaster. I mean, I know that I try to be. I mean, I like to be, think I'm pretty good at it all the time, but you know, it was fantastic. I think you asked great questions. It's very clear to me that you've read the book, which is an honor and certainly makes for a better conversation.
No, fantastic conversation. Thank you for letting me read an advanced copy. That there will be an endorsement, absolutely, for your book. And to use, I when you're writing it, I know what that's like. You've done this many times. You're so sick of looking at it. But I want to turn the question you always use in your podcast is, what are you reading now?
Well, I'm reading stuff for my podcast. So let me tell you, I've got two books that I'll be reading in the next couple of days. One is called Undoing Urgency. I love the title of this book by Ryan Matt Reynolds, and I'll be reading the brand new book. It hasn't even out yet. It will be out by the time you all see this, called Focused as a Bee by Jones Laughlin, who's a friend of mine.
Nice.
And beyond those, I'm in the middle of reading a very thick book called On the Edge by Nate Silber.
Okay. All right. So awesome book recommendations. Kevin, all of the links to you are going to be in the show notes, but what are the best ways for people to, obviously your book is releasing in March. Again, I want to call it out: flexible leadership, navigate uncertainty, and lead with confidence. That's in March on bookshelves, everywhere you get your books, but other ways that people can see you and your work, Kevin.
So let me first of all say, thank you, Michael, for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here. And, you know, I mentioned LinkedIn. It's one of the places that I spend time and we share a lot of content there. So feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn and connect with me there and say that you found me or you heard me on the 97% Effective podcast. I'd love to have that sort of feedback in that loop. And because the book isn't out yet, we want to make it easy for you to get the book, but we also want to give you a gift just for listening to our conversation. So if you go to kevineikenberry.com/gift, you can get a free copy of our remarkable masterclass that I created about being more confident and building confidence in others. So we didn't really talk a lot about confidence today, but it's another one of the big ideas in the book. And so we're going to give you that masterclass, $79 masterclass for free just because you're here. kevineikenberry.com/gift. And on that same page, we'll give you a link to go find the book as well. So, you know, you don't have to wait till March the 25th, as Michael knows. You can pre-order it now. We'd love to have you do exactly that.
Cool. And super awesome. As we said at the beginning, hey, the goal here was to have a fantastic conversation, and you're going to help a lot of people with your book. Kevin Eikenberry, leadership expert, chief potential officer at the Kevin Eikenberry Group, and author of the upcoming book, Flexible Leadership. Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.